Welcome to hour number three of Sports Talk. I'm Jimmy Himes with Vince Farrar. Pleased to be joined now by a special guest who joins us each Friday. That is Al Brown. His appearance brought to you by Matlock Tires, a full-service tire center located on Kingston Pike near Lovell Road. They have a location in Lenoir City, also coming soon to Hardin Valley. Al Brown, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Good to be here with you and Vince today, as always, on a beautiful sunny day in East Tennessee.
And you put me on to Matlock Tires. I've been using them for many, many years.
They're great people. And the thing that's forgotten sometimes, Jimmy, and you mentioned it in the intro, it's a full-service automotive store. So you not only can get your tires checked, rotated, and all those balanced and everything, but you can also get your car serviced, which is a first-class service in every respect.
Tennessee falls to Arkansas last night, 83-75. If you're really looking at the key numbers as to why they lost, 23 turnovers led to 26 Arkansas points. Al, if you continue to have turnovers in mass like that at this point in the year, can you correct it?
I'm not sure, Jimmy, that you can at this point in the year. It's been an ongoing problem. It ebbs and flows a little bit. They've cut the turnovers down in some games where they've had 14-16, but they had 16 the first half last night against Arkansas, which is very difficult to overcome. With all that said, the interesting point about that, in the third quarter, they were only 5 points behind. In the fourth quarter, they were 6 points behind. And so even with those turnovers, they still had a chance to win the ball game. Now, they didn't get it done, and certainly the turnovers contributed to it, no question about it. But the point is, a play here or there, in addition to maybe one or two fewer turnovers, could have been a big Lady Vol win.
Ray Burrell had 21 points. She had 19 in the second half. Do you like her starting with Jordan Horston coming off the bench?
Well, I like Burrell's game. Obviously, I liked it before she even was put into a starting position because she brings great energy to the court. I can see her starting with Horston. I can see them starting four guards. That would mean maybe Brown would be replaced as a four player and Burrell play that spot or Horston play that spot. But, yes, she has done a great job as a starter, and she's been very impressive coming off the bench. So Burrell has stepped up her game considerably.
Who else needs to step up for Tennessee, for the Lady Vols?
Well, Horston needs to develop into the kind of player she was in high school. Now, she made some mistakes in high school, talking to her coach, Will McKinney, from Ohio, but she got by that. And if she can, she sees the floor, Horston I'm talking about, sees the floor as well as any player you'll find in women's college basketball, but she doesn't always see the big picture, and she has to learn to make better decisions with the ball. Once she does that and develops as a scorer, which she can do, she can be a dynamite player.
The Lady Vols have lost 5 in a row. Last year they lost 6 in a row to set a program record for consecutive losses in conference play. So 5 in a row, they haven't won a game in February. Now, when you look at their resume of 17-9, Vince and I were talking about this earlier, against teams with an RPI in the top 50, they're 1-9. Against teams outside of the top 50, they are 16-0. That's not a real good resume to get in the NCAA tournament, is it?
It's not unless you're Tennessee Lady Vol. They have 3 games remaining, which would put them at 20 wins and 16 in the conference. They win a game or two, and they don't even have to do that. They win a game or two in the SEC tournament, or, of course, win the tournament. They're in the NCAA tournament. So we got in 97 with 10 losses. So, I mean, it's...
But that schedule was a whole lot better, wasn't it?
Well, maybe. I don't know that it was significantly better, but it might have been a little better.
On the men's side, they have had difficulty closing games. They blew one against South Carolina and then almost blew one against Vanderbilt, had a 12-point lead with about a minute left. Vandy cut it to 2. What do you see as a major obstacle for the men in closing out games?
Well, I think it's interesting to see what Vanderbilt did and how late they did it. Had Vanderbilt pressed earlier in the fourth quarter of the game, I know it wasn't a quarter, but in the final segment of the game, they could have turned it around the way Tennessee played. Now, looking ahead, look at the way Auburn plays at times. Pearl is a pressing coach at times, not all the time. He used to be all the time. But now if he looks at that tape and says, hey, we can press Tennessee right from the start and get ahead, that might be what he plans to do. So closing out the games, again, experienced guard play and good decision-making is critical there as well.
Bench continues to get outscored, out-rebounded. Do you see anything changing here down the stretch, or is this something that won't get alleviated until next season?
Well, they've rotated personnel starting, as you know, Vince, and so Johnson started, Plastic started. They're coming off the bench or coming from the bench to the court. That hasn't seemed to help. Gaines has played some good minutes. Olivier's played some good minutes, but nothing consistent. So to answer your question, it may be a year away from being able to contribute significantly. But in the last two games, the bench has been a non-factor in terms of productivity. Now, they spelled the starters a little bit for time, but you've got to be productive off that bench.
What happened with the progression of Uroš Plavšić? We really haven't seen him continue to get better. I know Rick Barnes has pointed to all the time he missed, and he's not able to make mistakes in games now because it's such critical times. But what do you see in him?
Well, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, he started against Mississippi State and scored 16 points.
Mm-hmm.
And now his time since then has been sporadic, probably based on his practice habits. I can't attest to that. But he is a presence out there and was in a game against big inside talented players at Mississippi State, and he was productive. He hasn't shown that he can be consistent in that regard. And I'm sure his practice habits aren't quite what Coach Barnes and his staff would expect.
Al, if you look down the road, do you think that Tennessee, the rest of this year, but even looking forward to next year, can Tennessee win with Santiago Viscovi at the point guard position?
Well, I think they can. He's going to get better. Now, I think he's a better off guard than he is a point guard, but he's going to continue to improve his game, his American game, let's put it that way, and has flashes of brilliance. So it doesn't matter where he plays in the future. The young man who has transferred in, sitting on the bench now, is a bona fide point guard and will probably fill in next year at that spot. But Viscovi is the real deal.
In regard to this Auburn team, Vince and I talked about this earlier. I think there are two keys. One, if Isaac Okoro doesn't play, he's missed the last two games with a hamstring injury. I think he's a really good freshman. The other thing, I think Tennessee's got to somehow stop the penetration of the Auburn guards. Your thoughts on that?
Yes, and the straight line drives bother Coach Barnes as they do any coach. And Auburn is excellent at that, as well as shooting the three ball, although they've been a bit sporadic in that regard, Auburn has. But Okora is one of their top players as a freshman and has been, as you suggest, injured the last two games, and so we don't know his status coming up for the game tomorrow. But even so, Auburn can offset that with a lot of talent that they have coming off the bench as well as their starters.
What are your thoughts on their two guards, Samir Dowdy and then McCormick?
Well, McCormick has come back from a horrific injury, and Dowdy is a first-class guard. I think they're as good a tandem as almost anybody in the conference except for Kentucky, maybe, and they have been very productive.
In Auburn's last seven games, in six of them, they either lost or went into overtime. what does that say about where Auburn is right now?
Well, it says that's a lucky basketball team. Anytime you can do that, you have got the everything going your way. Now, what happened is it caught up with them the last two games, and, of course, they lost those games. But prior to that, as you mentioned, four overtime games, and they won all of them. They have done that all year. Jimmy, as you recall, and Vince will recall too, in the preseason, they played a lot of softer opponents at home and struggled to win. They won. And so I'll tell you, the one thing it does help a team, and Tennessee was faced with that the other night against Vanderbilt, it helps to play those close ball games and find ways to win, because as you advance in tournament play, you're going to have those games. And if you have an experienced team that knows how to win in close ball games, it helps you immensely at tournament time. So I would look for Auburn not to have a great run in the SEC tournament as well as the NCAA tournament.
How important is Wiley to this Auburn team?
Well, he's been a force and a veteran player. He gives them great inside presence, and I think he's one of the real keys.
When we come back, we'll have more with Al Brown. If you have a question or a comment, 656-9900, 1-866-656-9900. Al's appearance brought to you by Matlock Tires, a full-service tire center located on Kingston Pike near Lovell Road. They have another location in North City, one coming soon to Hardin Valley. This is Sports Talk 99.1, the Sports Animal.
Sports all the time. It's not a lifestyle we chose. We were born this way. 99.1, the Sports Animal.
Welcome back to Sports Talk. I'm Jimmy Himes with Vince Farrar. Our guest, Al Brown. His appearance brought to you by Matlock Tires. All right, Al, your top five men's basketball teams in the country.
Well, that's easy, Jimmy. Number five is Kentucky. I think Kentucky's playing as good a basketball as anybody in the country right now. I think we'll see that as the SEC season winds down. And I've liked them from the start. So I've got Kentucky at five. San Diego State, only because of their schedule, the only undefeated team in the country at 26-0, is my fourth-place team. My third-place team is Kansas at 23-3, and Baylor's number two at 24-1, and they match up this weekend in the premier game tomorrow in Waco, which is a wonderful place to visit. And then Gonzaga is the number one team in the country. Few is an excellent coach. They've been to the Final Four. They know how to win. They've got talent at all positions, but they have a matchup against BYU this weekend, which is also going to be an interesting test, although they've passed every, meaning Gonzaga's passed every test to this point.
How surprised are you at Baylor this season?
Well, really surprised. I thought they would be decent, but I thought West Virginia, Kansas, maybe even Kansas State could be near the top of the Big 12, and Baylor's proven that they can win against everybody. I thought their only loss, I believe, is at Washington earlier in the year when Washington was playing some good basketball, and since then they're undefeated, and they beat Kansas at Kansas. You don't do that every day. Tennessee experienced that, or got that experience this season. And so now what happens on Saturday? If Kansas is able to do the job on Saturday, that gives Baylor just a little bit. It doesn't really hurt them. It gives them a little bit more of a realistic view of what they need to do to get ready for the big dance, but they're for real.
Your top five men SEC basketball.
Well, we'll go at number five. It's very hard to find a fifth place team right now because everybody's so log jammed as you go from really two on down. Mississippi State, I've got them in fifth place in my poll. I've got Auburn in fourth place. They dropped because they just can't seem to win in the conference. They could win outside the conference, and they've lost two straight. But they're still a very, very potent team. And then I've got LSU in third. Wade has done a great job of keeping everything together, and although they've lost four games in the conference, they're still one of the top teams. Their shining loss is at Vanderbilt, but they've since fought back from that. Florida, who was the preseason pick by many people to be not only one of the top teams in the conference, but one of the top teams in the country, and then they just struggle. But now they're 19-9, they're 9-4 in the conference. So I've got them in second place. They've had wins over Mississippi, Mississippi State, LSU, and Missouri, all comparable, all good opponents, and then Kentucky with only two losses, and one being to South Carolina and another one being to Auburn. I've got them at number one in the SEC.
Al, I know in the men's game, the way the NCAA, the selection committee, they're using the quadrants to determine strength of opponents, where they play, things like that. That there's some debate on the value of that, but it is what's being used on the men's side. So I look through, because Jimmy and I were talking about all the SEC teams and where they were in the net rankings. But I looked at the quadrant one records of all the SEC teams. If you combine Kentucky and Auburn, their quadrant one games, which are the toughest opponents, they have a combined record of 11-5. The other 12 SEC teams versus in quadrant one games have a record of 24-83. What does that say about the league?
Well, first of all, it says a lot about your research, Vince, and it's outstanding. I think, and you'd have to do that for every league to just get a good view. Mm-hmm. A lot of this RPI quadrant and all of this information, when you have a committee selecting the teams for the tournament, a lot of that information is used to justify why we put somebody in and why we left somebody out. And the rest of the field, it doesn't matter. So what it says is the other teams in the SEC aren't very good against great competition. But then what about the Big Ten, the Big 12, the Pac-12? You know, you could go and look at that. Mm-hmm. I've seen projections that they're going to be as many as 11 Big Ten teams in the NCAA tournament. I can't believe that. The Big Ten is not any better than any of the other conferences as far as I can see, and I watch a lot of basketball. Division I men's basketball is a mess, to put it mildly, because it's hard to predict who will advance in the tournament, or who will even get in the tournament. So a lot will be resting on the committee as they sit in their smoke-filled room to figure out who's going to be a member of their 68 wonderful opponents.
Let's hope the only smoke is like barbecue pit they might have going in there.
Hopefully they're not vaping.
Yes, exactly. That could have a lot of connotations, but
yeah.
Anyway, those are reputable folks that are making those decisions.
I will say that to your point of, yeah, maybe how does it compare to the other conferences? The two records in quadrant one that stand out the most among the higher ranked teams, the top 25, top 30 teams, Baylor is 10-0 versus quadrant one, Kansas 10-3 versus quadrant one. Those are the two best records. And if you look at some of the schools that aren't in the traditional Power Five conferences that people look at, there's a number of schools like a Creighton and a Villanova, a Seton Hall. They all have high volumes of quadrant one games. both of those teams are 8-6. The first two are 8-6. Seton Hall 9-6. It's a lot of games versus the Quadrant One. So it sounds like the Big East is pretty well thought of, and they're getting a lot of high level competition in conference. It seems like.
Well, that's correct, and the Big East is having a good year from top to bottom. This could be an interesting year to see how many teams get in. Let's say the SEC only gets four in. Mm-hmm. Let's go to the Big Ten and forget that 11. Let's say they get six in just off the top. All of a sudden, that opens up spots for other teams that we've been talking about in the Big East, in other conferences. The Atlantic 10, for example, we could go on down the list. The West Coast, although they're not as good this year as they have been, but it opens up a lot of spaces for maybe some teams that otherwise wouldn't get in.
When we come back, we will talk about the decline of three-point shooting in the NCAA on the men's side so far. Al Brown's appearance brought to you by Matlock Tires, a full-service tire center with a location in Lenoir City. Also at Hardin Valley coming soon, Matlock Tires in Knoxville, located off Kingston Pike near Lovell Road. This is Sports Talk, FM 99.1, The Sports Animal. Welcome back to Sports Talk with Vince Ferrar. I'm Jimmy Himes. Our guest, Al Brown, his appearance brought to you by Matlock Tires. I want to ask you, Al, about this. As far as three-point shooting in Division I, it's at 33.3% so far this year. That's the lowest since they put the three-point line in 1986-87. Of course, the difference there is they moved the line back. Last year, the worst shooting team from three-point range made 29.8%. 25 teams this year are shooting worse than that. Are you surprised that the numbers are this bad?
No, because there's not a lot of good shooters out there. I should qualify that. There are not a lot of good scorers out there. There are a lot of people that can shoot the three ball. Now, what they what the folks who put that in will tell you is that when we moved it back the last time, the first year or two, the numbers dropped, and then they came back up. So they'll say, well, these numbers will improve over time. Well, they might, and they might not. They're only going to improve if the people that are shooting the ball are really good scorers, not just good shooters. And so I don't know if you're going to have the three. I think if you're going to have the 3-point shot in where it was fine, but we always have to tinker with the game and make changes. So this was a change they felt they should consider. For freedom of movement in the lane and all that kind of stuff, and that hasn't shown me that's improved or that the quality of the game has improved just because they moved the line back.
They've tried to go more toward the international game, and another move toward the international game, if they do it, would be changing the men's game in college from halves to four quarters. Would you like to see four quarters in men's basketball?
Well, I grew up at four quarters and I loved it, and then when I went to two halves, I got adjusted to that, and when the women went to four quarters, it just didn't seem right. Now, what happens when you go to four quarters? It involves a lot more coaching because they're how do you close out each quarter? How do you start the next quarter? There are a lot more decisions that need to be made in a quarter played game than there is in a halftime game because there's just obviously two halves.
I'm okay with it the way it is because I don't think there's anything wrong with it. But would you like to see it changed?
No, I would like it to stay the same. And I would like the 3-point line, if they're going to have it, to be where it was, not where it is now.
All right, I want to ask you about the situation with the NCAA in Pittsburgh. Kevin Stallings was there for 2 years. He gets fired. And then the NCAA hammers him. They give him a 3-year show cause. They said that Stallings instructed 3 non-coaching staff members to perform coaching duties, resulting in the program exceeding the number of permissible coaches. and that Stallings developed an alert system to ensure impermissible staff members would not be caught on the practice floor coaching players. He also ordered that practice video be deleted so that administrators could not confirm the violations. Your thoughts on the punishment for Stallings and for Pittsburgh?
Well, first of all, Stallings is not coaching, and neither is the assistant that they punished. And Pittsburgh has a new coach, Capel, and a new program. And you're going to punish Pittsburgh. Now, across the country, there are other schools, and we won't name them necessarily, but there are other schools that have been under consideration for NCAA violations of one kind or another. And nothing has been done to them, but we're going to punish Pittsburgh. And we're going to punish two coaches that aren't even coaching. So it's interesting, but not certainly anything that the NCAA hasn't done before. When I first started coaching, the old statement was, Kentucky has another violation, and let's clamp down on Cleveland State. Let's put them on probation. So that was kind of a joke, folks. But anyway, I don't think it makes much sense.
Does it bother you that Kansas and Auburn and Arizona and USC and the others that were implicated in this have not been punished?
Well, I guess the question is, Jimmy, and you've enumerated those. Why haven't they? Why is all of a sudden Pitt in trouble for something that a lot of coaches across the country do? And it obviously doesn't say involving paying players or anything like that. It's simply maybe teaching players and having different coaches help teach them. Why are we punishing, or are they being punished? And I'm not saying they should or shouldn't be. I'm saying that it's interesting that they are punished, and the schools that you alluded to, apparently nothing is going on right now.
I bet when that news came out, Cleveland State was shuddering.
I'll bet they were, too.
They were worried. Yeah. Let's go to the phones where Mike is on. Mike, you're on with Al Brown.
Hello, Mr. Brown.
Hi, Mike.
I just want to talk to you about this year's basketball team and how good we could possibly be next year. I mean, we could have the best team we've ever had next year. We're struggling this year, but we're building some depth. But when you look at next year with Victor Bailey, the 6'4 guard out of Oregon, I think he's averaging like 13 before he come here. And then you got Muscovy. He has just come in, you know, in 7 weeks and done so good. And then you look at 2 5-stars, Keon Johnson and Springer at the number 2 guard. Then you turn around to 3 guard or the small forward, and you Corey Walker, and then you got Josiah James, a big thick guy that could be in there. You know, you got a 2 deep first, second, and third team on there. Those guys are going to be really good. But to make it to the Final Four and the best we've ever done at UT, we got Pons and Fulkerson that's going to be super good. But how critical is it to get a junior college transfer or somebody to come in, a big guy, to help us next year to reach that? If Pember and Plavsic and our 6'8 freshmen, if they do not improve, you know, we are not going to reach that, because if Fulkerson goes out, we're really going to be hurting next year with all those 6'5 and 6'3, 6'6 guards. You know, what do you think about that?
Well, Mike, you've analyzed it as well as anybody could analyze it, and it revolves around the post play. There's going to be perimeter players with great talent and great depth at every position. And now what about the post position? And if Pons plays and Fulkerson plays in those two respective positions, what do we get coming off the bench? And Olivier has to develop, which I think he will. Plasic, again, should improve. But those guys are going to have to. One of the problems with the previous team, the one last year at Tennessee, was a backup post. There wasn't any backup post. And so there's going to be some post possibilities, but as you suggest, if Fulkerson gets hurt, if Pons gets hurt or either get ill, who fills in? And hopefully the guys you mentioned, Pember and Olivier and Plasek, all come and step up and provide that important inside presence, both on the defensive end and the offensive end.
Okay, and if we stay healthy, what do you think we will be next year in basketball and going along with, you know, all the talent we got coming back in football? You know, will this next year be in football and basketball on the men's side be a special year?
Well, I think it could be a special year for both teams, no question about it, Mike. I think Coach Pruitt has done a marvelous job of developing a solid program. They ended on a winning note, and they've got a lot of depth coming back and coming in. So I'm excited about the football season, and I'm also excited about the basketball season. I think, without question, all of these young men that you mentioned coming in are going to have to adjust to playing together and get used to each other. So I think there will be a period of time early in the season where there will be some ups and downs. But as the season progresses, I think the basketball team will develop into one of the better teams in the conference, without question.
All right. I think Coach Barnes will get it done, though. And I appreciate you taking my call.
Well, Mike, thank you.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it. Hey, when we come back, if you want to join us, 656-9900, 1-866-656-9900. Al Brown's appearance brought to you by Matlock Tires, a full-service tire center located on Kingston Pike near Lovell Road, also in Lenoir City, and coming soon at Hardin Valley. Sports Talk, FM 99.1, The Sports Animal.
The king of beer, the king of sports. Live from the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Radio WNML.
Welcome back to Sports Talk. I'm Jimmy Himes with Vince Farrar. Our guest, Al Brown, brought to you by Matlock Tires.
Al, we went over your always anticipated rankings for the men, both nationally and in the SEC. Why don't we get to your top five women's college basketball teams in the country?
All right. The top women's team in the country is reasonably or is easier than the men. I've got Mississippi State in fifth place. They're 23-4. Stanford in fourth place, 23-3. Oregon, 24-2. And I will say this, that was my preseason NCAA champion pick, Oregon, and I will stand by that, even though I've got them third on my list right now. Baylor in number two because they've only lost one game. And South Carolina also only a one-game loss is the number one team in the country. And that's pretty much chalk with the national rankings. I understand that, but that's the way it shakes out as far as I'm concerned.
Where, at least in recent history, I don't need to go into all time, but Sabrina Ionescu at Oregon, in recent history, where does she fall in terms of a women's college basketball player?
The best point guard, I'm not going to say ever, but she would be in that discussion. She a triple double threat every time she steps on the floor. Played great against the U.S. national team that's touring, the team that will some of the members will represent our Olympic team. She is a student of the game, a tough competitor. She is the best player in the country right now, in terms of not only her position, but helping other players at their position be good players.
In the men's game, it's talked about that star players can carry teams with a deep run into the NCAA tournament through the NCAA tournament, and then also guard play is very important in the women's tournament. Are those things enhanced even more in the women's game, star power and guard play?
Oh, yes. Look at Kentucky with Howard.
Right.
They have a nice team. Howard makes them a threat to play against anybody in the country. When you look at a lot of games in the women's game, the best player on the on either team carries the day. Now, yes, it doesn't happen in every game, but in more games than not, what you're suggesting is the star player makes the big difference.
All right, because you mentioned South Carolina and Mississippi State nationally, good chance they're in the SEC top five, but what about the rest of it?
Well, let's start at the top with South Carolina and Mississippi State. You mentioned that that's 1-2 in our league, and that's 1-2 as far as I'm concerned in the conference. Now, I will say this. It's very close for number three. Before the season started, the most veteran team in the SEC with the most talent coming back was Texas A&M, and Carter goes out. Now, they've held on without her. She's back now, as Tennessee folks can attest to that. So A&M is third, but they could move up quickly. They could beat Mississippi State and South Carolina. And, of course, Gary Blair has won a national championship. They don't have, and I'm talking about A&M now, they don't have the depth necessarily that South Carolina and Mississippi State has, but their first five is as good or better than either one of those two teams. Mm-hmm. And then Kentucky, we talked about just a minute ago about with Howard. I've got them in fourth place, and then Arkansas in fifth. And Arkansas has proved last year in the SEC tournament that they are for real, and they are for real this year as well.
Now, we're short on time. I'm going to go quickly through your keys for Tennessee against Auburn. Control the boards, plus 10 on the rebound edge. Control tempo, make it a half-court game. Execute against a full-court press. And Auburn only shoots 40% overall, 27% from three. But as you point out, they get to the foul line 29 times, making 20. That's going to be a key for Tennessee as well.
I think so, Jimmy. And you've got to keep them off the line. Now, it's easy to say. It's hard to do because they attack the lane. They attack the basket. So if Tennessee can keep them to the 15 free throw situation between 15, even 15 and 20, they're in good shape.
Al Brown, always great to catch up with you. We certainly appreciate it. Have a wonderful weekend.
Thank you, and I will, since I've been here with you and Vince. It just makes my weekend.
Doesn't get any better than that. Al Brown, his appearance brought to you by Matlock Tires, a full-service tire center, locations in Maryville and Lenoir City, with a location to come in Hardin Valley.